Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Buck Starts Here, the podcast that digs deep into juicy stories, power plays, and wild twists that shape the presidencies of the United States. My name is Kyle, the Beetle Bailey, to Eric's General Amos T. Half-Track, and today we are stalling for time because after Pierce, neither of us have the stomach to tackle James Buchanan.
So, what a horrible president. I know. Just the worst president of all time.
So we've got quite a fun lineup here planned for this intermission. We got a Freaky Friday Frederick Douglass episode coming up. We've got a special where Eric Mason's going to walk us through how America's personal economies have changed over each decade. But today we've got something else fun, I think, planned for that. We've got some general discussion that we recorded a few weeks ago that ended up going longer than I thought. So
terrifying.
Right. So we got about 10-minute segment of that we can roll after we do some discussions on, I think, the ranking system.
Yes.
So we've been ranking presidents over the course of, I think, almost a year now at this point, right?
Yeah, it's been about a year.
Right? Isn't that
crazy?
Wild?
Yeah.
So I think the idea is just kind of go back and look through and just make sure that we've been, you know, consistently applying the same criteria. Because I kind of feel like we started out saying that the time period we were evaluating was strictly their presidency, but then as time has gone on, we've kind of also started to include like the effects of their decisions down the road too, right?
Yeah.
I feel like John Quincy Adams maybe didn't get quite as good of a score maybe as he should have gotten on some of the...
Because he should get a perfect score?
Nah, I mean, I'm not quite the homer that you are, but yeah. I am a fan.
Oh, we don't have Polk in these rankings right now.
Oh, did I forget to... grab his?
Not a huge fan of Polk. I think if you're trading enslaved children as president, you don't...
should have left.
Yeah, you should have just left him out. That's honestly fine.
I know. Should have just left all the negatives out. Actually, Polk finished higher than Andrew Jackson somehow. Maybe there is. Maybe we do need to evaluate Polk.
Well, Polk had a weird presidency because he accomplished a lot of stuff he wanted to accomplish. He was just a horrible person.
That's right. What did we ding him on? We dinged him on transformational leadership.
But, yeah, because he literally accomplished very short-sighted what he wanted to accomplish and was like, peace.
I do remember he was also really weird with, like, he was had a lot of rhetoric fight, or, you know.
What, yeah, and he just, like, negotiated and everything.
Yeah, we'll just negotiate. It's fine.
Yeah, you're just like, I don't want to fight a war with Canada at the time.
Was that all him, though, or was that because his number one general also refused to aggressively enforce expansionism?
Could you imagine that nowadays? Like, could you imagine if they were like, yo, go do X thing, and the general was like, no. It's like, well, what are you going to do? It's like, you can come lead the army. Dude, the more, like, it was funny. I was talking to somebody recently, I've mentioned it before, but I have a buddy who's a historian. And I was like, what are your thoughts on Taylor? And the first thing he said, he's like, way undercredited for how good of a general he was. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. And he's like, yeah, right? It's because... if the Mexican-American War was like a lot more protracted and it was like more intense, it would have been, you know, and he won that. It would have been like how we view Ulysses S. Grant, maybe to a lesser extent. But he was like, he was just so efficient that it was like, oh, that must have been easy. And it's like, you actually research the battles. You're like, oh, he was undermanned all the time. He like figured out logistic and supply chains before like anybody else figured it out. Somehow managed to establish them in a foreign country better than the foreign country could do it. And then he fought like a gentleman's war. with it and like showed his enemies like so much respect, but then also struck fair in them because he was like, hey, close quarter cannon fire, but also I'm going to set all the grass on fire so your horsemen can't operate. And then he sit back like hyper honest reporting of like what was going on. And it's like, dude, that's, yeah, it's like if he was less competent, we'd view him higher. I was like, that's a funny way to look at that.
Well, you got to save that discussion for a little bit coming up here. But no, back to JQA then. Let's take a look. Political influence, I think, was the one that I think was the most controversial of his scores. We gave him a 2 out of 7. We scored him low because we gave him a lot of... We didn't like the fact that he just couldn't get much done. He didn't have support of Congress. They were always fighting him. That was, yeah, I think, the main thing, right?
And we didn't include the Monroe Doctrine because we said that was when he was Secretary of State.
Right, that's right.
And then you look how the Monroe Doctrine has been used over the next 200 years. I mean, Kyle, you did a great job with those episodes on like the pillars of the Monroe Doctrine. Right. And like the Monroe Doctrine was John Quincy Adams' idea. Like that was, he's the most influential Secretary of State of all time, by far. Like it's not even remotely close. And a bias, like don't get me wrong, but he really... It would be hard-pressed to find a president who – it's not just the Monroe Doctrine. It's everything he did. It was bailing Jackson out when Jackson decided that he was going to overthrow governors in Florida. And it was like, can we not start a war with Spain? We are like a decade removed from, and this is when he was Secretary of State. So we're like 6 years removed from Britain getting involved here and having to fight European powers in America. And he was like, no, no, no. He somehow managed to stop European incursion, compounded with establishing a sphere of influence for the United States. That's a very, very thin line. His ideas when it came to recognizing Gran Colombia, mm-hmm. which obviously topical to the news, is like right. that's where Venezuela comes from. It's funny. It's very, very funny when you think about it. So his ideas of what the Monroe Doctrine meant, as we discussed, changed a lot over time. Still, that core Monroe Doctrine. Don't get me wrong. That idea of like the Western Hemisphere. I don't want to try and like water down what John Quincy Adams was trying to say. But I think the fact that during his presidency, he was sending ambassadors to recognize Gran Colombia and stuff like that speaks that he didn't just see the Monroe Doctrine as, oh, America gets to might is right, that he viewed it as more of like a globalized right. partnership. I'm going to put words in his mouth for a second, but I think he viewed it more of what like the modern EU is and less of a sphere of influence that you maybe see in Central Asia from like the 1950s to the fall of the Soviet Union.
I think that makes sense. So now the question I have for you then, so someone who got the similar score actually is Zachary Taylor, Speak of the Devil. We gave him a 2 in political influence as well. So what is the difference between a JQA and a Zachary Taylor then? What do you think?
Well, Zachary Taylor, so if we're going to expanding their politics, right, we're expanding their political career, because obviously Zachary Taylor got, you know, passed away early in office. You know, the world would be very weird if Zachary Taylor had a second term, right? If you didn't have Millard Fillmore.
Oh, my gosh, right?
Like, think how wild that'd be. Like, I'm not saying it stops the Civil War, but when...
It probably delays it quite a bit.
Well, yeah, when the best general in the world says to you, hey, guys, I'm going to come down there and fight you. And it's like, oh, you're going to send the army? No, I'm going to lead the army. It's like, oh, well, you are the best general we've ever had.
Right.
This isn't a Continental Army fighting militiamen. This is a professional military that he, throughout his career, showed that he's incredibly good at leading, even when he has – in the middle of nowhere.
And he has malaria or is hammered.
And just has malaria his entire life. I think that would have been a little scary if I'm like – you know, you got this new – I don't want to say like – it's not a frontier lawyer, like, but like kind of frontier lawyer Abraham Lincoln, who's not a military man. Like, oh, maybe – but let's test his resolve. If the other guy's like, I'm going to fight you. And it's like, oh, you're going to fight me. Yes, but you have slaves also. I'm also going to fight you. It's like, because his wasn't even a discussion about slavery. His was the union must persevere.
And where we dinged him on political influence was just didn't have a platform.
He didn't have a platform.
That's not what he was elected for.
America was like, that guy seems really competent and we like his restraint and we're all kind of scared of him. Can we elect him? And he was like, I don't want to be president. And they were like, can you be president? He's like, I guess being president was kind of cool. it is wild that he ran as a Whig. Isn't that crazy? Like if you,
right.
like the largest slave owner, top 10 largest slave owners in Tennessee at the time. And he's just like, I'm going to run as a Whig. And everybody's, you know what that means, right? He's like, yeah. It's like, okay. And somehow was the least pro-slave man on the ticket as opposed to Millard Fillmore.
I know, right?
Which is wild. Like the Fugitive Slave Act never gets passed if Taylor's in office. He straight up was against it.
Yes.
He was just like, this will destroy the union. And everybody was like, no, it's just a compromise. And he's like, well, you know, wars, again, a man right. who fought wars was like, the road to war is paved with compromise. Yeah, I Taylor's a weird one
like
for
a Churchill quote.
Obviously, like, in our ranks, there's a heavy bias against slave-owning presidents. And he's the enigma on here where he's just like, his personal beliefs don't match with his policy side of it. But it's that pure unionism. He's just like, America above all. It's very mm-hmm. similar. I don't want to put Taylor and Lincoln in the same camp. That's not fair at all. But that whole idea of what Leo Lincoln said, like, if I could free all the slaves and save the Union, I would. If I could keep all the slaves and save the Union, I would. If I could free some of them and keep the rest enslaved to save the Union, I would. It's that pure unionism. It would have been cool to see him in office instead of Millard Fillmore, who opened that door. The Compromise of 1850 opened that door. And
would have liked
I don't
to
think Taylor
him,
opens that door.
I would have liked to have seen him, too. But even if not, if was, you know, at least to be there to, like, you know, lead some of those armies. I think it might have been interesting to see how him and Grant did together.
I think it would have been cool to see, like, you definitely know Taylor was a little bit like, he was a military genius. He definitely wanted a whiskey rebellion. He wanted to be like,
right.
George Washington got to lead an army, and I got better cannons. I wonder what army I could lead.
He was threatening a convention in South Carolina.
That is so wild. Could you imagine, like, the president's like, hey, chumps, I'm going to come down there. Like, oh, you and what army? Me and the United States military. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. You're in charge of that, and you're the best guy to be in charge of.
Yeah, and they love you.
Yeah, and they will fight tooth and nail for you.
Okay, so what are we doing here with Mr. Adams then? Are we going to bump him up a point?
We got to bump up Mr. Adams if we're taking the Monroe Doctrine. And there's still policy shortfalls. Like, as much as I want to be a homer on this, there are still actual, you know, shortfalls with some of his ability to politically influence his people. Like, the party died after him. Like, that always has to be a demerit. Like,
yeah,
the Democratic Republican Party was gone. I would probably give him maybe, like, 2 extra points, make him a 4 out of 7, maybe a 5 out of 7.
So if you bring him up that high, you realize that he's going to overtake Washington as our greatest.
That's overall governance. See, this is where it gets weird. We might have to, like, I know this sounds stupid. We might have to force Washington to be like a 35 out of 35.
Because
now we're opening
full,
it up to everything.
Marks.
Like, we're opening up to their entire life impact of the United States.
So Washington is probably more like the standard, if anything. He's like the one that we compare everyone to, right?
Yeah. Like, the part of me, like, do we go back? Because, like, what did he lose points on, Washington? Overall governance?
Right. Well, anytime we said that you need to send an army to put down a rebellion, we're going to ding you on that.
All right. So we need to get rid of that rule. What? Yeah, we're getting rid of that rule. That's I've become very pro
because
putting
you're
down
about,
rebellions, apparently, in this ranking.
That's okay. I see.
Yeah, I think there's 2 presidents. It's almost like a force 35. It's like Lincoln and Washington.
Oh man, that's, how are we gonna handle that?
Yeah, dude. Okay, so political influence is a 7. We give him a 7 on that, 7 on transformational leadership, and a 7 on strategic vision. What did he not get about public needs?
We knocked him for public because he was a slaveholding president, so we felt like that always had to be knocked down.
Yeah, that's right.
Challenge. I think we were just maybe a little harsh on a guy. I mean, for the first one.
Can we relativize this?
Okay. How do we do that?
Like, because if we do that and we're like, hey, take into account that it's literally a brand new republic.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it's a 7 out of 7. You couldn't have asked for a better first president
in terms of
governance. Yeah. Like, he was like, I'm not a king. Honestly, that's wicked harsh. The fact he didn't just decide to become king should be 7 out of 7.
Okay. All right. So
I'm not trying to talk myself into a perfect score, but I am trying to be like.
I don't think he gets a perfect score, but I think if we give him the +2 on that governance to bring him up to 7 on everything except for understanding of public needs, I think
he was so distant as a president. Like, he was so, like, he just wasn't engaged. Like, the people loved him. He loved the people, but, like.
Right, right.
That's the hard part. And we always take at least a point off for, like, literally not addressing the thing that caused the Civil War.
Yeah. And also,
I love how anti-populist he was.
If he was contributing to that system, too, I feel like he still needs to be dinged for that.
Yes.
Right?
Even if it was he inherited them from his wife. I don't know if that changes it.
Nope.
Nah, it's still part of the system. Yeah, that doesn't change it.
No, if you're going to ding Taylor, then you got to ding. You have to ding Washington.
Yeah. Taylor was wild. Just wild belief. That man is crazy.
All right. So
he low-key turned into one of my, like, most fascinating people we've researched. Again, like, all the presidents, all the side characters. I'm just being like, what is this dude doing? Like, this is a what? Like,
so +2 to John Quincy Adams' P score, and then we'll give George Washington +2 to his governance to get him to 7 of 7. That brings Washington up to a 33 and Quincy to a 31.
I just think when you look at what JQA did over such a long period of time, his presidency was horrible, but, like, dude, he was in American politics for almost 70 years. Like,
and then the other thing that, it does, the AI that I put all this data into does say that we have a tendency to ding people for having too quiet of a presidency. Although this is literally the second highest president score we have right now. So I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Yeah, like, I get the criticisms of, like, Polk's ranking
right.
and stuff like that. But Polk was also a horrific person.
I don't think Polk is the one that it was pointing to, but I get what you're saying.
I think Andrew Jackson, I think we ranked him way too low on transformational leadership.
You think?
Yeah, because if we just take it as a blank slate and we look at everything that happened after him, I mean, he's responsible for 3 more presidents.
It's just, I think this one we allowed ourselves to get... I think we allowed our morality to influence us on this one. And to be honest, I'm still okay with it. I really don't want to bump him up, but I mean, okay, make your argument.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'd give him like an extra point in Transformer Elite because he's a 7 that then gets points knocked off because of everything afterwards. It's not like we're saying, you know, we're building him up to like a 5. Well,
okay,
5.
Hold on. Just because you, just because your actions led to more presidents and your disciples getting elected, if you're still sowing discontent and your leadership is actually not good for the country, I mean, are we still...
See, that's a good point, Kyle. Like, are we saying the leadership is positive or negative, or are we just saying the absolute value of leadership?
I mean, since we introduced negative scores, I think now we have to say that they're positive or negative at this point.
Okay, right? In that case, keep it a 4.5, because that means it's an 11.5 on a 14-point scale. That's fine.
Yeah.
His strategic vision was horrible, and I will argue that to the day I die. His strategic vision was so bad. You caused a financial recession.
I just wonder if we didn't realize that negatives were allowed at this point. And
like, I'd give him like a -3. I would change the 0 to like a -3.
All right.
He gets a little reprieve because like they didn't understand stuff and he was like bullheaded.
Like, right. They still won't admit it.
It's
how
weird.
Many years?
Like, I'm happy that, like, Jackson, like, when I was growing up, Jackson was seeing Arnold Hickory and everybody, you should love how tough goods. And I love that, like, the tough guy has been replaced with Ulysses S. Grant, not just because, like, pro-union and cigar smoker, but, like, he was what everything people thought Andrew Jackson was. He was a better general than Andrew Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Jackson, like, take on a military, like, oh, he beat the British. And it's like, dude, we had that good comment about, like, oh, it took resources from Napoleon. That excellent comment by that gentleman. But in terms of, like, he fought a small contingent of British soldiers after war was over on the other side of the world. It's like Ulysses S. Grant fought, like, was the North richer than the South? Oh, God, yeah. Was the South relatively rich to other nations and other, not nations, because they weren't a nation. I have underwear that's older than them. Like, are they, my beard is older than the Confederacy. I just realized that. Like, right, my facial hair is older than the Confederacy. You didn't. Like the South was a wealthier area funding a military than most places were in the world at the time, and he handedly beat them.
But the South had horrific. Going for him. But the South had going for him. I mean, we're going to get into this in detail, but what I remember reading is like everyone who grew up on a farm knows how to shoot, right?
Yeah.
So you've got a Southern, you know, militia conscript army, a bunch of people who are good shots, going up against a bunch of city folks who've been drafted, you know, to try to go down and fight this war. That was the impression they gave us in school in Arizona, right?
Yeah, because I was going to say the North was still predominantly agrarian. For a very, very long time. It'd be another 100 years before that fully shifted.
I think the problem is, though, that there's none of the manufacturing systems for making guns were based in the South. That could be a big problem.
And then even the manufacturing was in the South was horrible compared to the North. That was like, don't forget, like, where were cotton gins made? They were made in the North. Like, so like, all these machines, like, oh, we can make steam engines. It's like, you can make, well, it's like, oh, well, I have soft hands. I played the violin on my estate. It's like, okay, here's Johnny, who's been working 18-hour days since he was 6. And Johnny's like, oh, I can make a pretty good tube. That's pretty good at containing pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, and I can machine stuff really well where you can put 6 little tubes in a J-frame. That is going to be a problem when you're wearing
a crank on it.
Yeah, and then we're going to make these boats, and then you're not going to get anything you want. And it's like, maybe the Brits will join in. The Brits were like, we like trading the more expensive stuff. It's like, but don't you need cotton? It's like, we do, but do we can get cotton? Literally anywhere else that grows cotton. Where are we going to get, like, all the intelligent people who can build factories and stuff and can, manufacture things? It's like, where was the Industrial Revolution in the United States? It wasn't in Virginia. It wasn't in the Mid-Atlantic. It was in Lowell. When it's pronounced Lowell. I hear people Lowell. I'm like, what Lowell? What are you talking about? Like, Lowell. Lowell's north for Boston. Like, it's I love that Lowell. It's like, if you ever been to Lowell, you're like, dude, you could see why that became the industrial, the birthplace of the American Industrial Revolution. It's just rivers everywhere.
Where's the patent office? The one that the Brits didn't burn down.
Yeah, it's in D.C., but you know, nobody's checking patents when you make when you got to mass produce stuff for war.
Is there anybody else on these scores then that stand out as something that we need to argue for or fix?
I feel Van Buren was very even.
I loved what we did with Van Buren. I felt like he deserved his redemption. I wish we could make William Henry Harrison higher, but I mean, he only served a month in office. What are you going to do?
Dude, he was just, again, he would have been an interesting president.
Tyler was awful.
Dude, he was so bad.
It's like, oh, the ticket that got the guy elected. I'm just going to do the opposite. That's a terrible plan, right?
I never really understood that. So it's funny. I was going, during the break, Kyle was like, hey, comb through your notes, see if there's anything weird. And I got to the Tyler section, and I was like, I got to have missed something with Tyler. And as everybody knows, there's massive holes in everything we do here. Like, this is an hour. Right. Like, come on. If you think this is the total history of a president, like, no, this is like just like goofy history, goofy economics, right? Like, I was trying to like figure out what I missed on the Tyler administration. And then like I went back through it, I looked at some of the stuff, and I'm just like, he didn't want to be president. Like, I'm just to the point where he like didn't want to be president.
Oh, you think he was just throwing it?
Yeah,
just I think trying to make sure. Please don't give me this job again. I'm going to do so badly. You definitely won't elect me.
Dude, I think he was just like, I'm going to run the government. Like, I'm a colonel, a general, whatever. And then just, he was, people were like, do you have a political vision? And he was like, no. And they were like, oh, do you want to change anything? No. Oh, what are you doing here? He's just like, I'm just going to do what I want to do. And the Whigs were like, hey, you know, like we elected the other guy because he was just like had all these positive qualities and stuff. And he was like, yeah. Like, I think if somebody went to John Tyler and they were like, do you want to go be the Secretary of War and trade places? He'd be like, yes. He would just be like, yep.
Right.
Just be like,
he looks like that guy. He looks like that guy, right?
And like, so like we were critical of him, as we should be.
Yeah.
But he just like didn't want to be president.
He got a decent score in overall governance. I mean, we weren't that rough on him.
Because he ran it like a military officer. He was just like, all right, we're going to do all this stuff. We're going to do it like,
Royal machine can still be running the wrong direction.
Dude, but right. Like, he just like, the economy was back on track. He was just like, you know, just kind of humming along. And like, I think the best example is he has a high, you know, overall governance score, but his transformative leadership is just a clean zero.
Yeah.
It's not negative. Yeah. It's not positive. He just didn't do anything.
Right.
Like, we gave him negatives on strategic vision, but even his, like, he had such little vision that he got a negative because he had such little vision. It was just like, that's it. I can't even really criticize his, like, ideas. It was just, you know, nonsensical. He just didn't, he would be a great example as a excellent administrator. Like, if he became Secretary of the Interior, I feel like that would be, he'd be considered the best Secretary of Interior of all time.
I feel like rating Tyler Jr., I should say, is like asking, what does time taste like?
You know? I know it exists, but...
Right? All right.
Could we have been meaner to Miller Fillmore? The answer is yes.
You know, as mean as we were, we did have a lot of fun with him, and I think we did...
He's
a terrible president, but he was a fun character.
He was.
We're not rating him on his character.
Because he was like... Oh, here's a guy who's like perfectly designed to be president. And it was just like, you failed. Like,
you just failed. You were just, that went poorly.
Wow, you shouldn't have done that. He should have done the John Tyler. He actually would have been great if he did the John Tyler. Like, I'm not elected. I'm just going to sit around here. Like,
I think you said it well when you said that it was, what do you call it? A compromiser when we didn't need a compromiser. We were past the point of needing that. You can't. What'd you call it? The road to appeasement?
The road to war is paved with appeasement. Yeah. Compromise. Like, it's so weird to go from a president who's like, I'm going to fight you. And it's like, oh, really? To a president who's like, let's talk. It's like, well, the dude who was in office like 30 minutes ago was willing to just kick off the Civil War. And like, you know, Taylor's thought was like, it's not going to be a Civil War. You're not going to have time to amass troops to be a Civil War.
Right.
To a guy being like, let me agree with you. It's like the other dude had a bunch of slaves and it was from the South. It was a military guy. And you're like some dude, some like actually very good legislator from a free state or from a free state. And you're like, you're cool with this? It's like, oh yeah, let's figure out how to get everybody on the same page. Like, dude, we're not on the same page, man. This book's ripped. I wish I could be meaner to Franklin Pierce.
Yeah.
He was so bad.
I'm kind of torn on that because the content that we put out on him is actually doing like really well, surprisingly.
Because nobody does content on Franklin Pierce. And it's
I don't think that's it. I think it might be just because their school is actually maybe getting in the news a little more, the basketball team.
Yeah, yeah. We also were very fair. We were very – I went out of my way to be more objective on Franklin Pierce because I felt like I didn't actually have to have an argument. Martin Van Buren was this like cool story of like this guy who should have been – despised as a president and despised as a person for what he did. Non-charismatic Andrew Jackson. And then you go over his life and you're like, oh my God, this guy has one of the best redemption arcs in political history. Right. And then you get to Franklin Pierce.
It's not that. It's like the opposite of that.
It's literally the opposite.
even Van Buren was a little bit like... No, not Van Buren, I'm sorry. Even Millard Fillmore had like a little bit of like some redemption. Like, he at least was able to travel and have some fun over in Europe. Like Pierce, I don't even think they wanted him over there.
No, in like Millard Fillmore, if you look at his upbringing and stuff like that, it's interesting. Like he should have been a better president. He should have been a George H.W. Bush. That's who he should have been as a president.
Oh man, you get him in there earlier or later, I'll bet you he does him a lot better as a president.
Oh, right? If you put him in the Gilded Age, we're like, oh, there's a freaking there's aircraft carriers named after Millard Fillmore, but he's in now. Like, yeah, it's weird. It's weird. Yeah, it's funny because a lot of times the times are defining the presidents right now more than the presidents themselves. Like Taylor's the we keep going back to it, but Taylor's the best example. The time defining the president, because in any other time he gets thrown in the same category as Jackson, as slaveholding general and stuff like that, who his men love. But he was in a time period where his ultra pro unionist views made him this like weird, unexpected ally of the North. Not because he believed in the North's values. See, I don't think he didn't believe in the Southern values either. But he was just like, I believe in the Union. I believe in America. End of story. And he was like, I'm willing to fight about it. And then you go to Bill Thurman, who's like, oh, I have no spine.
I don't think that's what he said, but
like Millard Fillmore in the 1990s, doing great, doing absolutely. Yes. Soviet Union falls before GWAT. Like Millard Fillmore is having a good run,
right? But don't put him in there if we got the Cuban Missile Crisis going on.
No, he would have. We would end up Cuban somehow. Yes. We would end up like so completely losing. We didn't even fight a war. How'd we lose this bad? Milton was like, I got a solution. We'll just become Cuban. Cubans can't fight with Cubans.
Right. All right. Well, are you ready to break some continuity and we can talk about some generals?
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Let's go scared.
Check out some past us. So this one's for you, Eric.
Oh, that's scary.
Been talking a lot about generals and like Zachary Taylor and William Henry Harrison, Winfield Scott. Between those three, I'm curious, like, how would you rank the three of those generals?
What's like the, what criteria, can I just go off my own criteria?
Just tell us what your criteria is.
All right.
I would say all things generalship, but.
I think the goal of a general is to accomplish its military goals as efficiently as possible with the least amount of loss of life.
I want to add one more caveat to that then too. And I want you to judge them based on their success at all levels of their career too, not just their top level.
Ooh, okay. That's right? Hard because Taylor and Harrison are both very successful. But I think this is controversial. I think, actually, I don't know if this is controversial. Zachary Taylor's height was, I don't think, even remotely comparable to Harrison. And it certainly wasn't considered close to Winfield Scott, because Winfield Scott, yes, did he have some accomplishments, and he have a very long and successful career, but did he flub the most important job? Yeah, he did.
Did Zachary Taylor ever get the most important job?
I think he was the most important person in the Mexican-American War. Even though Winfield Scott took Mexico City, I think the only reason that Polk didn't order... he did order Taylor to do stuff, but Taylor refused to do it, is because he knew how strong-willed Taylor was, and he was not going to invade a sovereign nation for no reason. I think he was like, ooh, Taylor's like, because, I mean, remember Polk wanted to, like, try him for treason because he was like, oh, you told me to secure northern Mexico, and I did. Well, you should have why'd you let the garrison, like, retreat? He's
right,
like,
right, yeah.
Because I'm supposed to control northern Mexico. He's like, I invented new military tactics, Polk.
Do you have a different opinion? No, I'm just curious.
Okay, I'm nervous.
So who's your top of the two, then?
Harrison, I would say Taylor.
Taylor.
I would say Taylor.
Okay.
Harrison was a great administrator. He was a great administrator, great logistics guy. But you compare the War of 1812 in terms of how successful military objectives were done as a whole, it's not on the same par as Zachary Taylor. Do you want to argue that William Henry Harrison really combined maneuver warfare and logistics and was able to win battles he never fought? You should absolutely get credit for that. But with that said, so did Taylor. Now, did he learn it from Harrison? Of course. But then he actually fought those battles and showed, I mean, I read off
the better.
Right, dude. I read off those, what do you call it? Those battle casualty reports. It was insane. It was 30 to 1. It was absolutely. Sorry.
Okay. So, Taylor's moving on then. So, there's the next round. I want you to rank Taylor amongst Grant, Washington, and Sherman.
Hey, Washington's out. He had way less military success than people make him out to be. He was just persistent, so.
Okay. Okay.
All right. And then who's
Grant and Sherman.
So I think I have to say Grant's number one. On there.
Interesting.
Now, the reason I say Grant, because he won the Civil War, which is won a mechanized war.
I bet you Taylor would have won it, too.
Probably, honestly. But Taylor was probably probably looking down and being like, crap, I would have loved that. That would have been so much fun. Guys have repeating rifles?
Wonder what the casualty rate would have been if Taylor
Way less for Taylor. Right? At the time, Grant was considered a butcher, but I don't think that's fair to say. I think they didn't have the right. They were fighting Napoleonic Wars with modern weapons.
Rapidly firing weapons.
Yeah, I mean, like, be honest with you, like, there were still lever-action rifles being produced in the 1900s that were being standard issue.
Right.
I mean, do you think that, like, there was bolt-action rifles issued in World War II? Only one country didn't standard issue a bolt-action rifle. That was the U.S. And the Marines were still being issued the bolt-action, even though they just stuck with the 1903 because they trusted it more than a Grand. So that doesn't count.
I think they also wanted to shoot a 30-06 round as opposed to whatever it
was. A 308. I like the 308 better.
All right.
So Taylor above Sherman, though.
But it's interesting you put him above Grant, even though by your own criteria, it sounds like Taylor, you think, is...
I want to go after what we know from history, and I think...
So you're taking less of the hypothetical.
Yeah, because, Taylor was brilliant, but Taylor was also fighting a very, very... And I'm not trying to make the South out to sound like it was a good army, but he was fighting a very different war. I mean, like, he was just a very, very different war.
Yeah, was Santa Anna on the same par as Robert E. Lee?
No, I mean, like, Robert E. Lee's legitimately, like, one of the greatest generals to ever.
Santa Anna is more like, how does my face to your fist technique?
How many legs did Robert E. Lee lose during the war? Zero. Stonewall Jackson's, like, looking around like that monkey meme with the monkeys, like, sad-eyed looking away.
All right, next round. This is World War II round. Eisenhower, Patton, MacArthur versus Grant.
First off, we should include Omar Bradley in this.
Bradley.
Out on MacArthur. On MacArthur. What the most overhyped general of all time. I've spoken to one of my favorite. There's two questions I always ask when I meet generals, right? And I've been lucky enough to have dinner with more than a few in my life. Is what was your favorite rank? They all say the same. Captain. They all love being captain. They think it's super cool because you're like, I'm in charge of a company. I could overthrow a country because I have so many people.
Right.
The other one is, who's your favorite general? More than once I've asked that question. That has resulted in rants about how much they dislike MacArthur. He was not prepared. He did not put the planes up. He was told to put the planes up in the air in Manila. And he was like, I don't need to listen to you. I'm General MacArthur. It's like, okay, dude. Oh, and then they bombed the crap out of all the planes on the ground so we couldn't even defend ourselves. And then I'm not going to. He had the defense of Manila. Instead of falling back to a more defensible position, he didn't let them fall back. So he had the Bataan Death March was his fault. So. And then he evacuated at night. And then that famous picture of him coming aboard, when his pants get wet in the water, he yelled at the photographer because he thought it made him look incompetent. And then when it became this great video, then he didn't prepare any of the defensive lines during the Korean War. So we get pushed back to Incheon, and the Marine Corps has to bail him out and do an amphibious landing. Do you realize how crazy it is to think that they had to do an amphibious landing when jet aircrafts exist? They're like, what are we doing? So they do that. The Marine Corps pushes up to the 30th parallel, and they're chilling there. And Truman's like, yo, guys, good job. Let's just you won. You pushed North Koreans back. And he tells MacArthur, he's like, hey, MacArthur, don't advance towards the Chinese border. Because the Chinese were like, hey, we're not like, we get why you did that. Why you just, you know, pushed the North Koreans back. Cool, but like the reason North Korea exists, the reason North Korea exists today is because China's like, we'd like a buffer zone against South Korea. So.
And also somebody to do all of our hacking for us.
Yeah, probably too. And then, so MacArthur's like, okay, but he's like, I want more glory. So he starts marching north and he was reporting back. He's reporting back to the Pentagon that he's still at the 30th parallel. And then he ends up like pushing the Marine, but then like, because he's having South Koreans advance, but then like the armies supporting them. So he gets all the way up to the border with China. And then China's like, what are you doing? This looks like we're about to get invaded. It's like if somebody started in southern Mexico and marched an army towards the Rio Grande, we'd be like, what are you doing, dude? We didn't want Mexico near the Rio Grande like during this time period.
Okay,
this so time period like, is in like the 1840s.
Like MacArthur.
Yeah, and then his solution was like, what if we drop a lot of nukes? And Truman fired him, was like, this is, so you screwed up. You screwed up in two wars. You screwed up in two wars by being unprepared and being overly boastful. If it wasn't the Marines at Chosin, like, and he made fun of the Marines at Chosin because the Marine who's in charge of logistics was like, hey, I'm going to build all these airstrips because we don't have logistics. And he was like, oh, that's goofy. Look at the Marine Corps building airstrips. If you think the Marine Corps is being too conservative, you're a lunatic. You're a lunatic if you're a war. So no, thank you. MacArthur, I think, is one of the worst generals.
That's really funny. I would have thought Patton was going to be the lower on that list.
Benedict Arnold. Well, no, I don't know who's worse because Benedict Arnold at least knew he was betraying his country.
Good at what he's doing too.
Yeah.
He
at least knew he was betraying his country. I don't think MacArthur realizes his complete egoism. I'm so angry that he's like considered a good general in the pop culture.
So how does MacArthur rank against Jackson?
Worse. Jackson accomplished things. Even though I don't agree with Jackson, at least he was like a good military leader. But no, please show me the great thing MacArthur has done that wasn't like either him having overwhelming fire support and really good Marines with him, or like him having a bunch of like, what do you call it, subordinate generals who are amazing at their job. Like, I'm sorry, no, I'm absolutely not.
Okay,
no, thank
toss
you.
Him off, put Omar Bradley off on that list, and let's
Omar
that
Bradley.
Again.
Okay, so love Omar Bradley, tactician. He was not the rah-rah-rah Patton type of guy, but he's focused on logistics. He was very much like a William Henry Harrison. I put those two guys in the same camp. I'm good. The best way I can win is never having to fight. You know, he was the First Army. I don't need to talk about the First Army, right? Like, what they did in World War II was insane. I think he was so unflashy that hurt him. Obviously, there was jokes made because you had Patton ultra-aggressive and you had Omar, who's seen as too conservative. But I don't think he should get penalized for being, like, too conservative. He just wasn't Patton.
Right. Like, well, okay, Patton also was not, I don't think Patton was a good planner. I think he was a good executor.
Yeah, absolutely. Omar Bradley was a chess player. Patton's a weird dude. He's a little bit of a weird dude. Like, I don't read his biography. There's some personal stuff that would get really weird.
He's got
there.
A movie. You can watch it.
Yeah, he's definitely at CTE for playing polo too much. He is kind of like weird because we like rough and tumble like Patton, who grew up like rich, like who's playing. Hey, polo. You're rich. You have to be in the early 1900s to be playing polo. It was funny. He called tanks. He said there'd be nothing more than toys of war. And then like was like, oh, these things are sick.
And they
wasn't involved in wasn't involved in D-Day. I think that's a mark against you if you want to talk about best generals.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Suspended for, you know, beating up somebody who was shell shocked. I think that's kind of weird. That's
right, slapping.
I do like what he did to Montgomery during the battle for Sicily when Montgomery's like, protect my left flank. So he just took over the entire left side of the island and was like, that counts. But then there was war crime. But he also like there was a war crime committed because he told a bunch of National Guards guys, he's like, you don't let them surrender. You take the fight to them, and they executed a bunch of Italians. No, I'm out. So I think I've had this argument before. I like Omar better than Patton.
Yep, Omar to Eisenhower.
Eisenhower's the best. I think Eisenhower's the best general.
Eisenhower's the best. Yeah. So you have an Eisenhower over Grant.
Yeah, by a fair clip. Yeah.
So then top three? Eisenhower, Grant, Taylor?
I would go that. Taylor is obviously like fairly controversial. I'm going to throw out another general we didn't cover, but
Cushing?
A modern general.
Or
who?
Cushing?
No, Hershey? Not a bad pick at all. But if I was just like, going to go Quincy, General McConville, General Duffin. It's like, going to go Quincy, boys.
Right.
Stormin' Norman Schwarzkopf.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a good
think
one.
I think he was almost prophetic in his ability to conduct warfare. So a year before Desert Storm, he was running war games about a large Middle Eastern nation invading a smaller Middle Eastern nation.
People forget how large of a standing army.
Third largest in the world.
They had that at the point. Yeah. They didn't have shoes, but I mean.
In third largest army, amazing air defenses. But his use of GPS, his use of fire control systems, his use of all these amazing military weapons, his empowerment of junior staff, his hatred of Donald Rumsfeld during that time period was also hilarious. Basically yelling at him, like, you don't tell me how to prosecute a war. Colin Powell. I just like anybody involved with Colin Powell. But hit a nation so hard that he froze highways is, I don't know if anybody's done that. Also, one of his, in Vietnam, he had one of his subordinates got blown up in a minefield, and Schwarzkopf walked into the minefield and dragged the guy out. In his book, he talks about his legs were shaking so bad every step he took, he had to physically pick up his knee and move it forward. Pick up his knee and move it forward.
Jesus.
Yeah, so in my list, it's like Eisenhower, Schwarzkopf.
I mean, can you just take Bradley? The same steps he took? I mean, you know the one.
No, the guy was
to
hit.
The one.
No, like he got hit. He went somewhere else. Yeah, saved the guy's life. I think that guy like might still be alive. God, I'm not sure, crazy. But I think Schwarzkopf gets underrated. The bear.
I think that's a good list. I'll let you have that one.
Very angry. I'm very angry.
I know. I didn't think this
did I do good, go. Kyle? Were you happy with that answer?
I wasn't expecting a 15-minute rant, but you never know when you're going to get a good one. What
started
I have
no
ranking...
expertise to have these opinions on generals.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right. You have some pretty heated opinions.
My heated opinions go from like reading like military history and then like getting pop history and being like, why are we like this guy? Like,
right? Well, like, hold on. Your views are also colored by discussions you've had with actual generals too. So I mean,
yeah, but I don't want to rope them into my shenanigans. Those guys are actually very well educated. I will say, every general I've ever met, I'm like, I'm super pumped this dude led troops. Like, I'm happy this is the dude America's entrusted with armies, because like I would not be good at that. Like, you couldn't train me to be good at that. Like, I like to think I could. There's certain things that I don't do that I could be okay at. Leading men into no, I'd just be like, I'm usually pretty good at snap decisions. I think, like, being a CFO and stuff like that, you have to be good at making like decisions relative to the information you have now. But then you look at like what it takes in war, and it's like everything's like 10 orders of magnitude more. Like that type of leadership and decision making is just at a scale like I don't fully grasp.
With the consequences, I don't think I can handle the consequences, and knowing that the decisions that I'm making are leading to people losing lives.
Yeah, like right? One of the things, like, I've had, opportunity to talk to people who are master sergeants. Like, a master sergeant to me is, like, the coolest thing in the world, where it's just, like, because, obviously, like, our military is based on the NCO Corps, right? Like, the idea of having these non-commissioned officers. And you look at, like, how sergeants' minds work, like, that has to be one of the highest IQ positions. Like, the ability, especially on the combat side, where those guys, like, it's one thing to make like it's a different type of intelligence to make like these big strategic decisions, but making tactical decisions like in the most stressful way possible and somehow like being cool with that is wild to me. I'm like, you're just processing data at a different level. a gentleman I know, really very dear friend, he once said to me, he goes, a lot of times success is not about how smart you are. It's your ability to process multiple streams of data and information going in there.
Oh, I like that.
You know, like, I love that.
I really like
that.
I
love that. Like, and the funniest thing is that there's a certain amount, like, talking to, like, senior non-commissioned officers, senior commissioned officers, like, that whole group, the people who can do stuff like that, is their humility to not knowing stuff. Yeah. And I think that comes from seeing the consequences of making decisions and seeing the outcome that of the decision you made because you didn't know something, what you wish you'd known that before. It's that old adage. You can tell how smart somebody is not by their answers to the question, but by the questions they ask.
Mm.
Like it's crap. Yeah, I just could. Right. like freaking MacArthur.
Oof, I've asked some dumb ones.
No, dude, there's no thing. I joke, there's no thing. It's a dumb question.
Yeah.
I tell you right now, students in my class, I can usually tell who's going to do good in economics in the first couple of weeks, just based on the questions they ask, because it's just naturally curious.
If someone's interested, you know they're going to do better because they're just going to be more motivated to do the work. So I was supposed to wrap up here, I think. So I hope you guys enjoyed our intermission special today. Please thumb your noses at us if you think you enjoyed yourself. Drop us a comment if you want to suggest a topic. Wilder the better. You can get some really crazy ones in there. I bet you Eric really wants to delay getting back to Mr. Buchanan here.
I have Buchanan already written, and it's just, you're not going to have fun, Kyle. That's really what the problem's going to be.
I don't have fun when you don't have fun. When I can see the just slow dying of your soul behind your eyes as you even mention his name.
He's so bad. But it's a good hurdle. It's a good hurdle to get over. But I do often enjoy, and this sounds horrible, but I do often enjoy the process of being like, this guy is a bad president, and you need
and
to.
Here's
why. And there's this weird thing of revisionism where people like to take bad people in history and make them sound good because they get off on that for some reason. No. Emphatically, Buchanan should be viewed. And there's a revision of Buchananism of people being like, well, you know, if you actually look at – no. You should find those people and you should mock them. Intellectually mock them.
They might as well be flat earthers.
Yeah. No, it's like people who like still are like, well, we should communism and trash. Like, no, we've tried it enough. I don't know what more you want from me. Like, and as an economist, people are like, I've had people argue with me and like, you can, you know, get on Marxist, you can get on communist, and they'll be like, well, you're just saying that because you're somebody from the Western world studying it. It's like, yeah, I'm from the world that we have food. What do you mean? Yes. Like, well, yes, my opinion.
Yeah. The one that still has. Yeah.
Well, communism in Cuba doesn't
pants.
Work. Yeah. Communism in Cuba doesn't work because we sanction them. It's like, if your economy can be defeated by another economic system sanctioning you, do you know who also sanctions
America? It's not working.
Yeah. Do you know who sanctions America? Iran and Cuba sanction America. But we just don't notice because it doesn't matter. That just means it's a better system.
Yeah.
I'm enraged.
All right. Well, I'll see you all next week. Produced by China Shop Productions.